Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, the corporate media ignores. And tonight we got a big bunch of stories about emergency powers, the government overreaching, using emergency powers to take away your civil liberties. And we're going to talk about COVID. We're going to talk about guns in New Mexico. We've got more civil liberties they're taking away, but we're going to cover that separately.
Well, yes, we're going to look at why just today the FDA approved brand new COVID vaccines based on zero clinical trials. We're going to break that down for you as well. There's a lot to see there. A lot to see there, guys.
Also, the JFK assassination. New information regarding the quote-unquote conspiracy theory that started it all. And have conspiracy theorists been proven correct all of these years later thanks to this bombshell interview with a Secret Service agent? We're going to unpack what the Secret Service agent had to say. What does it mean for the conspiracy theories? What does it mean for the Warren Commission report about the JFK assassination? All of that and so much more as Redacted starts right now.
All right, I like Great. This chat that says Clayton looks like the Marlboro Man.
The Marlboro Man? Do I?
I guess so. He hasn't shaven today, so
I know.
I suppose that's the
only thing
the
I'm
case.
Not doing is smoking. That was funny. I was at a convenience store the other day, and this woman was there, and I guess she was there doing some promotional thing for smoking.
Yeah.
And she said, "Are you? Do you smoke? Do you smoke?" And I said, "Not yet." And she didn't know what to do with that. Like, I don't know if she was going to promote smoking to me or not.
Okay.
I don't smoke. Good to see everyone tonight. Welcome in. Thank you guys for joining us live. We've got thousands of you joining us from around the world. Good to see Gregory joining us from Canada, Ontario, Canada. Nice to see all of you. Let us know where you're joining us from in the chat. We're live on YouTube and Rumble and Twitter. And we've got a lot of news to get to. And Dr. Peter McCullough is going to be joining us here in just moments. He's taking up some moments out from his hospital rounds right now, seeing patients to deal with this breaking news from the FDA, which we will get to in moments. But first, we want to tell you about our newsletter, and it's our way to stay connected with you. You know, these platforms love to ban us and block us and censor us. That's what they do. And so one way for us to stay connected with you every day is with our daily newsletter. Just go to redacted.inc. It's not .com. Just go to .inc. Put in your email address, and you will receive a welcome email from us. That way, tomorrow morning, about 7 a.m. Eastern time, you'll get our daily newsletter where we cover about four or five of the big stories of the day. Some things you might have missed overnight while you were sleeping, but a lot of the stories that the mainstream media loves to ignore, we will be covering this FDA CDC story in great detail tomorrow in the newsletter. So please subscribe. It's totally free. Redacted.inc is the place to go for that.
Well, the FDA has given emergency approval for new COVID vaccines for anyone 6 months and older with no clinical trials to show for it. Don't worry, though. They say studies suggest that it's effective. Here to break it down with us is Dr. Peter McCullough, who has long since been critical of the COVID vaccines, and he is here to take a look. Thank you for joining us. Can you provide your reaction and just make it clear, this is not the original monovalent vaccine. This is not the bivalent. This is a brand new thing. So why are we getting so little information about it? What do you think of this?
I'm not recommending them for my patients at all or for family members. These are now monovalent vaccines directed against XBB.1.5 Omicron subvariant strain. That strain now is nearly extinct. It's only 3.1% of all strains out there. The current outbreak is driven by the Eris or EG5 strain, which is most prominent. And what we see is a pattern here where the Pfizer and Moderna are constantly behind. By the time they actually develop the RNA code for a particular subvariant strain, quickly the virus mutates away into another strain. So these are obsolete. There are no studies showing they would ever work against EG5. And to my knowledge, they're not any safer. We'd expect the same safety profiles we've seen with all the prior vaccines.
So I want to talk about the six-month-olds because they're and this is under the emergency use authorization, Doc, which is, so there's an emergency and among six-month-olds on up. So are you seeing an emergency of COVID among six-month-olds?
No, not at all. We're not hearing about it at all in children. Now, I've had some adults with the recent, presumably, ARIS strains, very mild. It's like a common cold and no fever, no pulmonary involvement. We just use the virucidal nasal sprays and gargles, and they work just fine, just over-the-counter solutions. Haven't had to prescribe any drugs. We don't believe the hospitalization data are adjudicated, meaning that the hospital started testing people again, and people test positive for many months afterwards. They're not bona fide COVID cases that are winding up in the hospital.
No, in fact, just today, the CDC's data shows that even though positivity test rates are increased, death rates are down almost to an unmeasurable number. So that actually verifies what you just said, is high numbers of positive cases do not mean high numbers of serious cases. And we don't have any data to show that this is any more serious, do we?
No, we don't. In fact, the virus has become progressively more mild. That's great. We know a paper from Clausen and colleagues, Harvard, 97% of us have actually been through the virus clinically or subclinically. And so second infections have a zero risk of hospitalization and death, as shown by Chin and colleagues, New England Journal of Medicine, October of 2022. So I don't worry about any of my patients being hospitalized with COVID at this point in time. Every so often, I'll get somebody who's, you know, never had COVID before. It's completely new to them. And I've had to advise on a case recently where we needed to, you know, give an oral medicine like ivermectin or doxycycline or prednisone, but it's very rare now.
What about this as a pre-existing condition? The idea that if you've had vaccines before, you might now be more open to getting COVID, that you are now somehow, you have less protection. Can you speak about that, which I find unbelievable? You couldn't say this 3 years ago. You would have been outcasted for this.
I know, but you know, all the countries that actually fairly report cases, hospitalization, deaths by vaccine status, like the UK does, show much higher risks for the vaccinated. So every single vaccine that's taken, there's more and more risk. There was a Cleveland Clinic study by Shretha that showed the same thing. So what's going on is what Wheatley and colleagues predicted in 2021. It's called immune imprinting. The body is being misdirected against antiquated strains. So when the new strain hits, the vaccinated are actually more likely to acquire it and get sicker. Those with no immunity, you know, have already faced the virus and against all the components of the virus, are in much better shape to actually, you know, manage an infection if they have it. It's the strangest thing to keep taking shots every 6 months, but yet be more and more prone to having the illness the shots are supposed to prevent.
Strange indeed. In fact, I was going over the fact sheet for each of the vaccines, one approved by Moderna, one approved by Pfizer. Both of them say this exactly under the section, what are the benefits of the vaccine, says the duration of protection against COVID-19 is currently unknown. So they don't know. They didn't test. They don't seem to care. And that leaves open the window. What I get concerned about is it leaves open a window to make you take another one in 4 to 6 months. That's not a question that you can respond.
But we've never had any type of vaccine where people who are following the narrative right now, they're on their eighth shot. We've never given eight shots of any type of foreign antigen or a killed vaccine or live attenuated vaccine, let alone eight injections of a novel genetic code where we don't see any evidence that the genetic code is broken down or disposed of in the human body. It's pseudouridinated. It's modified to be very resistant to human ribonucleases. The spike protein seems to have a very, very long duration of time in the body after it's produced by the vaccines. A recent paper by Brogna and colleagues, shocking. They were able to use mass spec and identify the spike protein truly coming from the vaccine because there's a certain signature, amino acid signature profile on it. And that is widely circulating in the body in their study up to over 180 days in about 50% of people who took the shots. That means 50% of people who took the shots walking around out there, can you imagine every 6 months they take a shot, they'll have continually circulating spike protein. The spike protein we know causes damage to tissues, organs, causes blood clotting and the complications all associated with the vaccines.
Right, which is not any more conjecture because those things you just said are on the fact sheet now. They weren't originally, but they are now at least on these. So you are given this warning, I guess. If that's
it's true. Patients are fairly worn down. The doctors are. There's over 3,400 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on this, over 800 on myocarditis. We have compelling evidence from the autopsy studies, papers by Holscher, colleagues. I'm the senior author. 73.4% of the deaths that occur after the vaccine are truly due to the vaccine. That's now proven. The benefits are very, very limited theoretical conjectures at this point in time. With no clinical data on the BA4, BA5 booster, it completely flopped. Now we have none on the XBB 1.5. It's another flop being introduced into the market on the efficacy side. And I think it'll be more continued safety concerns for people who take them. Fortunately, very few people in America are taking them.
Chris Kingdom in our chat says, how can they approve an emergency vaccine if there's no emergency? And then also Red Spartan on our Rumble chat says, can you ask the doctor about shedding? Yeah, how's it an emergency? And can you talk about the shedding?
The emergency use authorization was a mechanism that is completely predicated on having both a national emergency and a public health emergency declared by HHS. So the vaccines are government property issued as military countermeasures, essentially. So when the Biden administration on schedule dropped the overall national emergency and Becerra dropped the public health emergency, we should have been done. We should have been completely done. But FDA Commissioner Rob Califf came out and said, nope, the vaccines are going to continue to despite the lack of a national emergency. So here the FDA is just enabling this. The question is, who's giving the FDA these orders? Well, the FDA is supposed to be an independent watchdog. Who's giving the orders? You know, there is great concern, by the way, I'll tackle the rest, second part of this about shedding. Helene Benoon and Inserm, former scientist at Inserm, who's probably the most knowledgeable on this, she's pretty convinced the shedding is occurring both of the messenger RNA as well as the spike protein. Messenger RNA is circulating in the blood at least a month after the shots. Spike protein, you know, widely circulating for 6 months or more. So there's got to be a period of time where people take the shots. They theoretically could shed onto someone else with a lot of contact.
Well, it does seem like the CDC and the FDA are sort of wagging the dog, for lack of a better term, because tomorrow they will meet to decide which populations to recommend. And if they decide that they agree with the FDA, which we have no reason to believe they won't, then taxpayers, the federal government, will pay for these shots. So whether you want it or not, personally, American taxpayers will be paying for it. You know, I know I don't want to ask you to ring in on business deals and government corruption, but do you have a reaction to that?
At this point in time, they shouldn't be government property. They should be commercial products. People should, you know, should buy them. They should sell, you know, should be bought and sold, commercially approved by insurance companies, unless they enter into the marketplace as commercial products like other biopharmaceuticals. This offering of government property that is, you know, many times brought forward under the setting of pressure, coercion, threat of reprisal, mandates, is making people exceedingly uncomfortable. Do you know they are government property in every single country in the world? That's hard to imagine. Three and a half years into the pandemic, that these are still forms of government property. They should be just commercial products. People should decide to purchase them should they want them.
Yeah, as you write in your book, biopharmaceutical complex, just like the military-industrial complex needs to make its money. I'll get you out of here on this, doctor. You've been great, gracious with your time. We want to allow you to get back to your patients, which is turning on television, seeing all of these television doctors that work for like the local NBC affiliates and the local CBS affiliates. And then you have John Pierre at the White House podium and, getting up there telling American people, yeah, you know, it's getting scary out there. Go out and take these shots. That's the best thing that you can do right now. Mask up. Go get the shots. What do you say to that?
Masks don't work. Many people are now standing up against masks. Many governors, former President Trump. Scientifically, they don't work. We should forget the masks. But I tell you, the nasal sprays and gargles really work. Everybody should be outfitted with those when they travel. It's good for just general hygiene to avoid common cold, flu anyway. And then the vaccines are not safe, not effective. And we can't tolerate our government officials making false claims. So Jean-Pierre the other day was saying that the vaccines are the best way to stay safe from hospitalization or death. The vaccines have never been shown to reduce hospitalization and death in any prospective double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trials, nor in any valid observational studies. Recent paper on the preprint server by Michaels and colleagues that have analyzed all the deaths in the Pfizer dossier that occurred after the data cutoff for the very first meeting on December 10th, 2020 by the FDA, actually showed 38 more deaths, majority with Pfizer. There were actually more deaths with Pfizer the moment they were approved by the EUA, and the FDA missed it, Pfizer missed it or concealed it. And that pattern of excess death, particularly excess cardiovascular death and excess threefold cardiovascular death, that should have actually halted the program right there. Pfizer never should have been approved or on the market.
Dr. Peter McCullough, thank you so much for taking some time out this afternoon there at the hospital. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your expertise and insight, as always. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to doctor. Unbelievable. Any sort of final thoughts on that? I mean, the idea that it's an emergency, it's 6 months.
Well, I do want to take you through some of this for yourself. I think we should still go through some of my notes here because I want our audience to be able to see exactly what the FDA put forth for the American public to swallow. It is a whole load of horse shit. And I want you to just see for yourself what they expect you to believe. So we will still go through it. Do you have any other? Although I will say one of my reactions to what he just said was, what a good idea to travel with the saline spray,
right?
And gargle. Yeah. I never thought to do that.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
work.
I travel with like baby Tylenol and tooth in case anybody loses
like a saline spray, like a saline spray to clean out your nose, like make sure you're not get, you know, and
at the end
sure,
of the day, yeah. If you're like out in the world on a cruise ship or something, that's a great idea.
The biopharmaceutical complex can't make billions of dollars off of that. Just a little saline spray and some gargling, you know?
Yeah, great idea.
All right.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and go over this. The FDA has given emergency approval for the new COVID vaccine for people 6 months and older with no clinical trials to show for it. Don't worry, though. They say that studies suggest it's effective. They literally say that's it. That's all we get. Studies suggest. I want you to see this for yourself because it is insulting as a medical consumer. I just want to sort of present this to you as a little quote, because Herbert Hoover once said that every collective revolution rides in on a Trojan horse of emergency. Let's revisit that quote in a second. Now, here's the announcement from the FDA. You can see it yourself. I do suggest you read it. Now, Dr. Peter McCullough, when we spoke to him earlier, we spoke of this chart from just this month, which does in fact show that COVID cases, positive cases, are trending higher. We referred to that. But look at COVID deaths. Look how low they are, below even the color coding of the chart, how much they are plummeting. And when we remember that the CDC admitted that COVID deaths were overcounted, we can take those spike deaths with a grain of salt, but at least look at where we are now. So positive cases, yes. People are testing positive. That in and of itself should not scare us or scare us into an emergency. The hospitalization and death rates should be the thing we're worried about, and those numbers don't bear out. Now, given that this new strain has flu-like symptoms, which the doctor just said, why the emergency use? The CDC also recently said this about COVID, said that this new strain of COVID, known as the Parola strain, is more capable of causing infection in people who have been vaccinated. So given that the original vaccines make us more susceptible to COVID, according to the CDC, then here, take another one. Does that make sense to you? Vaccination is a risk factor. Here's a brand new one. Who would do that? I just want to know who would do that. Again, this is not a new booster. This is a brand new vaccine. It replaces the original two-shot monovalent and last year's bivalent. It's a brand new thing. You can get it if you've never had a COVID vaccine before. Okay, but let's just go through those questions quickly. Does it prevent transmission? The FDA doesn't say that. No data yet says that. Were there clinical trials conducted? If there were, they weren't mentioned in this announcement. In fact, the fact sheets that go with these new vaccines say specifically that the approval is based on the original vaccines. Look how Pfizer puts that. So it says, has this been tested? And they say, basically, they say over millions of people have had COVID vaccines from Pfizer before. Not this one. Here's some data about the, look.
That's like my track record.
Right. Well, look at those two paragraphs. The paragraph that gives their validation, they say that's about the original monovalent. That's the 2021. And then the last paragraph say that's about the bivalent one. That's the 2022 one. So it's clearly not this one that they're using to approve this one. Got that?
Okay.
That's great. Moderna vaccine says the exact same thing.
It's like going into a math class and be like, what are your bona fides for this class? Well, I passed my history exam.
Okay, good. That shows me you're a good student.
I'll last give you year. An
A. Yeah. That actually is a pretty good, that's a really good analogy, honey. You come up with them.
Not just here for the looks.
Right. Now, how long do these vaccines provide protection against COVID? They don't know. Here's what they say about that.
It's an emergency. Roll them out now. Get them out there. We don't know how well this thing works.
Do we have that screen? I'm sorry. I labeled this wrong. What it says there. Yeah, it's supposed to be Moderna, the one without a number. I apologize for that one. It says they don't know. Duration of protection against COVID-19 is currently unknown. What that says to me, what does that say to you? What it says to me is, we're going to ask you to take another one in 4 to 6 months. And also, we actually literally don't know and didn't care to test, or we have tests and we're not going to show you that.
So, you imagine then being up at the White House podium and you're Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, and you're asked about COVID and this outbreak of COVID, which the doctor acknowledged, this mild strain, it's like cold-like symptoms. So will this protect you against COVID? And the White House says yes. Their own data, that was Pfizer's own data or that was Moderna?
The one we just showed you was Moderna, but both sheets say the exact same thing.
So Pfizer and Moderna both say, we don't know. Unknown.
Yeah, they don't know.
But the White House is lying to you. The CDC is lying to you.
Yeah.
So they're telling you something that the Pfizer and Moderna are not telling you.
That they are telling you that they don't know.
Right.
Right. What were you going to say, Philip?
I was just going to say with this every 6 month thing, it's sort of like, if you had a kitchen fire and you called the fire department, they came in and put out the fire and the emergency was over and everything's fine. Then 2 weeks later, they take an axe to your front door, come in and just start spraying your kitchen again. It's like, what the hell are you doing? It's not on fire. And they're like, well, it could be.
Could be.
Right.
And just,
yet.
We were here 6 months ago.
Yeah.
That's the service we provide.
Now, one thing about, I went over not just the approval statement from the FDA, but these fact sheets that are given to doctors and patients when they are offered these vaccines. And so those are a bit more forthcoming than the FDA announcement, but they still don't have clinical trials. We showed you that. They at least now have serious warnings about myocarditis and other things. And then look at this Moderna fact sheet says, not that one. We're going to get to that one in a second. It says they're still studying the effects of myocarditis. I apologize. I ordered these wrong. That's not Philip's fault. Now, here's the big question, right? The $2 million question. Does it at least prevent against more severe COVID? Well, here's what they say about this. They say based on tests of previous Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, we think the data studies, not clinical trials, because they didn't do it, or at least they're not telling us if they did, suggests that the vaccines are a good match for protecting against currently circulated COVID-19 variants. Now, think of other drugs that the FDA approves. Normally, they give us a percentage. like was effective. Remember how the original one was presented to us, 88% effective against COVID transmission, 60% for the AstraZeneca or whatever, right? We at least got percentages that they could use from clinical trials. Now we're only getting the word suggests. Studies suggest. I don't find that very strong language. Now, again, this doesn't mean they didn't do clinical trials. It means they're not at all willing to show them to us. They don't reference them. If they did them, they just don't want to share it because there might be something there that we don't want to see. So instead, they're using this sort of algorithmic extrapolation that suggests that the COVID vaccine might neutralize the virus.
Ben Almond in our Rumble chat says this is 100% BS. That's a
I'm gonna get a t-shirt. Not my presentation of it, but
well, no, there's nothing that you've said that's okay. BS. You're just presenting the BS that they're foisting on us.
Okay, yes, that is BS. So now tomorrow on Tuesday, the 12th of September, the CDC will meet to consider which populations it recommends. If they go with the FDA recommendation of recommending this for everyone 6 months and up, that means that you, the American taxpayer, will pay for it because the federal government will be on the hook for that. So it seems like it's a for-profit effort on the back of taxpayers because we can't locate the emergency. We can't locate the effectivity studies of the original two COVID vaccines. And so then why are they doing this? Do they just have to keep up the charade so that they don't have to apologize for what they did originally? Or is it literally a power grab? I want to just end with this quote by Herbert Hoover, because I think it's important for us to remember what he said about emergencies and how it is the dictum of authoritarians. So here's the quote. He says, "Every collectivist revolution rides in on a Trojan horse of emergency. It was the tactic of Lenin, Hitler, and Mussolini. In the collective sweep over a dozen minor countries of Europe, it was the cry of men striving to get on horseback. An emergency became the justification of the subsequent steps. This technique of creating emergency is the greatest achievement that demagoguery attains." We can't control it, that powerful people want to use emergencies to take power. We can only control our response to it. So let us know what you think of that in the chat.
All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to talk about New Mexico. We're going to talk about Russians voting in a war zone. Plus, we're going to look at the JFK assassination and new revelations about that coming up in a moment. Anne Westmoreland in our chat says, "Hello, Clayton, Natalie, Grover, David, Pizza, Philip, Grimm, and everyone on the redacted staff." Hey, Anne, good to see you as well. We're going to get to all of your chats here. We're going to keep our eye on the chat rooms, and please subscribe if you're not already subscribed, and please smash that like button. I think we only have 2,700 likes, and there's about 25,000 of you watching. If you could smash that like button, it pushes us further out into the algorithm.
All right. Well, before we do that, we're going to move on. We want to tell you about our friends over at Private Internet Access. Because do you ever feel like you are being tracked on the internet? You are. We have so many stories we've done here on Redacted to prove that to you. But, you know, there's a great thing about browsing the internet privately so that, you know, a lot of times when you talk to a friend about something and then an ad posts up about something, that just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel safe. And so did you know that your internet service provider literally knows everything you do online? And over 30 million people have opted out of that by using a Private Internet Access VPN. A VPN is a program that you use to sort of fling yourself into a different direction so that you can't be tracked on the internet. It's an app that hides your IP address and safeguards your internet connection through an encrypted tunnel. This way, it shields your digital life from the eyes of those who are looking to exploit your private information. So Private Internet Access works with all major streaming services, so you can access more content than ever before in the world. I tell you what, we couldn't do our show without a VPN like Private Internet Access because, well, one, right now we are being heavily monitored for the media that we are allowed to see. And in the West, we just aren't allowed to see different perspectives that are considered wrong things. So if I want to, say, read a perspective from an Eastern country, I have to use a VPN or else I can't see that stuff. And so that is just one of many benefits of using a VPN. Now, if you want to enjoy all the benefits of private internet access, now is the time to subscribe. Head on over to piavpn.com/redacted. You'll get an 83% discount. Seriously, 83%. That's about $2.03 a month for privacy, which is immeasurable in value. You also get an extra 4 months completely free, but you must go to piavpn.com/redacted for a truly private life. One last time, that's piavpn.com/redacted.
All right, we've got more news to get to here, but first I want to take this one chat here from Neo Bigfoot in our YouTube chat. Neo Bigfoot in YouTube. He says, Clayton's job isn't at risk from jab verification, meaning getting the COVID jab. So Clayton's job isn't at risk from the jab verification. Always remember that. But yours may be, and he won't come to save you. Okay. So what you're saying, Neo, is that I'm telling people not to get a jab and it may cost people their jobs if they don't. So you're in favor of mandates, like employers pushing a mandate on their employees? And no, I'm not going to come save you. It's your body. You can do whatever you want. If a job is telling you to do something, you don't believe in it and you don't want to do it, don't do it. But if you want to do it, it's your body. You can do whatever you want with your body. I don't tell people to get tattoos, not to get tattoos. I'm just a little unclear about this point. Clayton's job isn't at risk from jab verification. Always remember that. But well, yours may be.
Let's apply that then to a CNN anchor who tells you to go get it.
Yeah.
And then you get hurt. Should they then?
Right. The reverse of that. Right. How about how many adverse effects from them pushing this on people?
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. So I don't quite understand what you're saying there, but I just want.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a good time to remind people that we're here to advocate for personal responsibility and decision making. How about that?
Yeah. Do whatever you want with your own body. Just don't force it on me. So yeah.
We're presenting you with information. If you think, hey, no clinical trials, you know, no real information about the benefits and the effects of this vaccine, but I'm still being asked to take it, I'll do it.
Very
then
nice.
Go ahead.
Very nice.
Go ahead. Do it.
Yeah. Oh, you mean this has never been tested?
Yeah.
Oh, sign me up. That's totally on you.
You know,
you do you.
We're not going to dogpile you. And chat room, don't dogpile people.
Yeah, don't leave Neo Bigfoot alone. He's making a point or she's making a point. But I'm just commenting on it. I just don't know exactly what you mean by that. I mean, you're right. I'm not going to come save you. If an employer forces you to get a jab and you go and do it, that's not me. That's not my responsibility. It's on you. It's your decision to do that.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever told you to do anything except call your elected representatives to ask them to pull out of Syria.
Yeah, to stop wars.
We have asked you to do that. I don't think we've ever asked or hit a like button.
Or sign up for a newsletter, but I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, let's talk about this. Well, they are using emergency powers to take away your rights, just like they did 22 years ago using 9/11 as a reason to take away your personal liberties. They're doing it again today, of course, on the anniversary of 9/11. The timing couldn't be more poignant, actually. The governor of New Mexico using emergency health powers to take away your freedoms.
New Mexico's governor has ordered the suspension of laws allowing the open and concealed carrying of guns in Albuquerque. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has declared gun violence and drug abuse a public health emergency after a string of recent deadly shootings, some involving children. Her emergency order temporarily bans the carrying of guns on public property, and it's effective immediately. Grisham cited the recent shooting deaths of three children, as well as two mass shootings in May. Some in law enforcement and elected officials say the order goes too far.
Yeah, some say it goes too far. Or that it doesn't make any sense at all. Let us know in the comments below whether or not you think it makes any sense at all. So I'll show you her reasoning for this. And I think this is a broader discussion. It's not just about New Mexico. Don't just focus on New Mexico here. This is a broader discussion about gubernatorial powers that go to 44 different states. that have unprecedented powers to say, screw the Constitution. We're going to do what we want to do. And certainly we saw quite a bit of that during COVID. So New Mexico governor orders suspension of open and concealed carry of guns in Albuquerque. The emergency order includes the suspension of open and concealed laws in Albuquerque. I'm not going to pronounce this county correctly, Bernalillo County. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Temporarily banning the carrying of guns on public property. So if you have an open carry and it's in your belt and you're out there publicly, sorry, you could be fined and or arrested as a result of this. But this is your constitutional right and it is your right under the law. But forget the law. We're sidestepping laws now. That's what we're doing. The National Association of Gun Rights has also filed a lawsuit against New Mexico's Democratic governor and health secretary over this gun violence law. And they're saying that this, how are you justifying this as a public health emergency, suspending open and concealed carrying laws in cities and counties based on crime statistics? So they have, and the argument, of course, is they have nothing to do with one another. That the people carrying out these crimes have nothing to do with the open carry law permitted individuals who are openly and lawfully carrying their weapons. But don't let facts get in the way of your outrage and your virtue signaling. State governors in 44 states have unbelievable authority under these emergency conditions. So it's not just New Mexico. And there's almost no legal recourse at all. Yeah, they might get sued here and there, but there's really no legal recourse. Who's going to step in? The Supreme Court? Maybe eventually, but in the meantime, a lot of damage can be done in those many years or months till the Supreme Court might take something up like this, as we've seen recently in places like Hawaii, for instance, right? And now New Mexico, Democratic governors have been playing with fire, as Zero Hedge pointed out this afternoon, and they're basically pushing this envelope of emergency controls down to the state level. But a lot of citizens coming out, pouring into the streets in Old Town Albuquerque and saying, no way, you're not going to take away my guns. And they all came out fully decked out in weapons saying, you're not touching my guns. And by the way, the police are not even enforcing this. They're supposed to be arresting these people. They're supposed to be issuing $5,000 fines because they're wearing these weapons now out in public. And the governor said no, but here's those protests anyway.
Crime is riddled, and all we want to do is protect our families, our friends, our communities. I've gone on two combat tours with the Marine Corps and fought on the front lines. I've done 11 trips as an independent contractor. She thinks she has the right to take away my freedom to protect my community. I don't think so. This will not stand. We will not comply.
So after suspending the right to carry firearms, then the governor basically gave this is an unbelievable moment. This piece of video here kind of just sums up the hypocrisy and the bureaucracy. And the sort of power grab nature of these governors right now, these Democratic governors who think that they can do anything they want and that the Constitution should really take a back seat to their own sort of political virtue signaling. Here she is explaining that, you know, her duty to uphold the oath to the Constitution is not absolute. Like, there are things that could supersede the Constitution, like this situation. Watch this unbelievable moment.
There are literally too many people to arrest.
Well,
this would allow us,
if someone's got a concealed carry permit in Albuquerque walking down a public street, they're not going to get arrested.
I can make the point that they should be. And this is the point. I'm willing to do anything and everything within a shred of evidence-based effort. Because if you're not horrified that on any street corner, in too many cities in New Mexico, there is someone with a gun sticking out of their waist or their belt. And I'll tell you, if you're a young person, you're not allowed to have a handgun.
Well, it's a crime already.
I got it. But we won't be able to arrest all of them. So imagine, just in a perfect world, if this was upheld, it gives all of these police officers the ability to focus on the real criminals.
Last follow-up.
Yeah.
You took
But your point is valid.
You took an oath to the Constitution. Isn't it unconstitutional to say you cannot exercise your carry license?
With one exception, and that is if there's an emergency, and I've declared an emergency for a temporary amount of time, I can invoke additional powers. No constitutional right, in my view, including my oath, is intended to be absolute. There are
I can't follow her logic.
So let's try to unpack her logic here, right? Now, remember that where crime has risen in the United States, it's risen in Democrat-controlled cities, okay? So just put that out there. Just let that hang out there, as you would say. Put a pin in that, and we'll circle back to it. First, crime is rising, again, in these Democrat cities around the country. Her argument is that, well, by these people that have these guns on their belts
legally.
Actually, I'm sorry. I can't figure out her logic at all, honestly, because she's trying to say is that this will enable the police to do their jobs by keeping law abiding gun holders off the streets, because otherwise they just would be arresting people. But they're not, apparently, because there are too many good citizens out there with guns in their belts, in their hips, going to the Starbucks. And you know what? It's really distracting the police officers from doing their jobs.
Okay.
Right. Right. I mean, that's kind of what she's saying. She's basically saying I'm banning legal firearms because under these like emergency powers, I have these emergency powers. So I'm just going to do it. Because there's an emergency, and yet she hasn't outlined any emergency.
Right.
There's no emergency. This is what they're doing to use against COVID. They're basically saying we have this massive emergency, and I think you're seeing a pattern here, right? They're basically laying out this idea that there's emergencies when there isn't one.
Yeah.
There's a climate emergency. Actually, the puffins are back. The polar bears are thriving. The Great Barrier Reef is better than ever. The Earth has actually been cooling over the past 10 years, and the glaciers are actually expanding in other areas where they've been retreating in other areas. But shut up. Shut up. There's a climate emergency. Oh, okay. So there's a COVID emergency. There's a crime wave in your Democratic-controlled city. So you need to ban law-abiding citizens from their constitutional rights, right? I mean, that's what she's saying here. She's basically saying open carry and conceal are not going to... And the idea that it's going to reduce crime is ridiculous because criminals don't give a rat's ass. They don't give a rat's ass about gun laws, right?
No, I wouldn't say that, because you can make the point that active shooters usually have legally obtained guns when it comes to school shootings.
Okay, but...
So they at least have a legally obtained gun. They cared enough to, like, properly register the gun.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Let's leave that for now.
Yeah, it could be your logic. It's kind of what I was hearing, because she was like, is if you pass the law, then law-abiding citizens no longer carry open, like no longer have open carry. So the only people then they find with open carry have to be non-law-abiding citizens. So it's like a weeding out process. I don't know if that's what she's getting at. Like oh, that guy's still carrying, and we passed that law, therefore he must be a criminal.
Whereas he wasn't before.
Right.
That doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so it's totally ambiguous, and it's for a certain amount of time. And, you know, I think the argument that I've been seeing today from some is that this is just a test. This is a test to see how much they can actually get away with. How much can they actually get away with these emergency powers? You know, first they do this, then they do this, and now they're trying this. Will you go with it? Will you stand up for it? Well, a number of people aren't, and you have these people pouring into the streets saying this is unconstitutional. And you know, you're not going to take away my constitutional rights to carry. I'm doing it to protect my family. I'm doing it to protect myself, because you don't police the streets properly because of your, defund the police policies. Now crime is rising. You're letting the borders wide open and illegal immigrants are pouring in and crime is skyrocketing. So that's my fault as a gun carrying, conscientious citizen? No, it's your fault. It's like in Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, when she was running for mayor again, blaming the retailers because they had great items in their stores. Like, they didn't have enough security. They didn't have security cameras. Move your items out of the window. It's your fault, the retailers, not us. The Democratic administration, who's now defunded the police and doesn't want to actually police the streets because we don't, you know, we don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
We allow people to shoplift. So now you're going to hurt, you know, you're going to hurt the average American. So, and also, how does crime have anything to do with public health? How does she's using emergency use, emergency health authorization as a justification for this under her gubernatorial powers as an executive order?
Yes, but we've seen a lot of, you know, powers taken away, freedoms taken away under the auspices of health, public health.
That's my point.
Yeah.
That they're using this as an umbrella.
Right.
There's, what does this have to do with shootings that have happened? I mean, if that was the case, then Philadelphia should be on a freaking quarantine.
Right.
Like, shelter Philadelphia should be, yeah, I mean, if that was the case, or Chicago or any of these other cities, if this is a public health problem. So anyway, let us know your thoughts on this. This is I think New Mexico literally is a microcosm of a larger issue of using these emergency powers to take away personal freedoms. And I couldn't imagine that it, you know, happens on 9/11, reminding us of the Patriot Act, reminding us of using certain things to take away personal freedoms. All you need to do is travel to the airport to remember what 9/11, what the impacts of 9/11 still have on us, for crying out loud.
I mean, I'm willing to listen to reasonable gun reform. That wasn't it. So I was waiting.
Yeah. Put up a good argument. Maybe make an interesting argument, discussion about it. I'd love to hear it. So, yeah. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to talk about Russians who voted in this war zone and went back to fighting on the front lines. We have an update from the elections that are just wrapping up in Russia and what that means and what that looks like. And certainly in these areas in Donetsk and the Donbass, who are, of course, under constant shelling and still able to go out and vote. So we'll bring you that report in just moments. Plus, we're going to look more deeply at the JFK assassination and the new updates about a Secret Service agent who was there that day, who managed to pick up the so quote unquote magic bullet. It's a pretty remarkable story. We'll bring that to you on a second. But first, are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 16 free stocks? Well, with Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface, easy to use, so even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools often reserved for experienced investors, like customizable watch lists, advanced charting capabilities. And now, Moomoo has even added a powerful new earnings calendar, so you don't have to hunt and peck trying to find the earnings schedule for your favorite companies. And right now, for a limited time, Moomoo is giving away 16 free stocks when you open your account, make your initial deposits, and even if you never do anything else with the account, you get to keep those free stocks. That's right. Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. And Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screeners, their earnings calendar. So no matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. So open your free Moomoo account today. Get access to zero commission trades, 16 free stocks when you open your account, make your initial deposits. You have to use that link on our screen, which is redacted.inc/Moomoo. All right, so elections have just wrapped up in Russia, and for the people of the Donbass, of course, this has been their first election as new Russians under the Russian Federation and under the Russian Constitution, being able to go out and actually vote for the very first time as a Russian. But still, as shells continue to rain down, you're in the middle of a war zone, and civilian centers, residential areas have been continued to be under assault over the past few days despite this. Patrick Lancaster is in the Donbass and filed this report during the voting. Watch.
Hello, Redacted. I'm Patrick Lancaster, and we've got a special report for you today from the Ukraine-Russian front line. Just on one side of us is the Ukrainian-controlled city of Siversk, and on the other side is the Russian-controlled city of Severodonetsk. And we're here today to show you what the situation is with the soldiers on the front line after they vote in the first Russian election for Donbass that has been held here in Donbass. And this is what was before the Lugansk blast or Lugansk region of what was formerly controlled by Ukraine and the West considers parts of Ukraine, but by Russian law, this is now considered part of Russia. So that's why these first elections are happening here. And we're showing you what the real situation is, what the Western mainstream media won't show you. We give you a choice what to see. So there's a lot more to come. We're going to talk to the soldiers here and give you a little tour here, hopefully.
Здравствуйте.
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 Что вы только сделали?
Голосовал. Я из Луганска.
Да? Да. И за что вы голосовали? Что это был?
Я патриот за будущую страну.
Да,
вы сказали, вы из Луганска. Как были это 9 лет война, конфликта для вас, для народа Луганск?
Ну, народ Луганск страдал от этого, потому что постоянно прилеты, люди гибнут, гражданские тоже, дети. И мы вот защищаем нашу родину и хотим, чтобы была будущая страна нашей.
А сколько у вас лет?
37.
Ну, вы знаете, как были это 9 лет война в Луганске, Донбасс. Вы видите все.
Да, видим это все, как простые граждане страдают от этого всего. И как это все развивается в другом месте против нас. Как-то вот так.
Вы думаете, ну, Запад, пресса сказала... В Украине фашизма нет. Это ложь, неправда.
Что я думаю, что это неправда, и она присутствует, это все.
Но фашизм есть в,
да,
Украине.
Да, фашизм есть.
Так. И вы, ну, вы знаете историю Красной Армии, Советского Союза, которые делают война, больше 9 миллионов детей умер против нацизм, против фашизма. И это были наши... это были наши...
Бабушки-дедушки.
И сегодня вы здесь. Ну, вы как они?
Наши деды, прадеды тоже защищали в 45-м году от нацизма людей. И мы, этот нацизм опять вернулся. И мы для этого тоже защищаем, как наши прадеды, деды, нашу страну будущего.
Как обстановка здесь?
У нас обстановка, значит, мы постепенно, потихоньку наступаем. Видим, что противник ослабевает и бросает свои позиции и уходит.
И как далеко они позиции?
Не менее 2 километра.
Можно сказать, ой, что это?
Выход. Укропский выход.
Угу. И где мы сейчас? Что обстановка?
Ну, мы вблизи серой зоны. Тут до нашего поста ближайший пост. 200 метров, наверное, пункт. Дальше здесь серая зона и укропы. Еще, ну, 1,5 километра уже идут.
Ага. И вы только голосовать тоже?
Да. Мы только вернулись с участка избирательного.
Uh-huh.
Вот. Проголосовал, конечно.
Вы откуда?
Я с Луганска.
Uh-huh. И почему голосовать?
Ну,
голосовали за свою будущую страну.
Голосовали за светлое будущее, за своих детей, близких, за родственников. Чтобы страна росла и процветала.
Угу.
Ребята, вопрос. Вы солдаты, у вас есть, ну, больше история, работу здесь. Вы видите оружие, Запад, потому что Запад пресса и политика сказала, это оружие для победы Украины. Это правда или нет?
Это оружие западное, да, присутствует. То же самое кассетные боеприпасы, украинцы стали очень часто использовать. Это, конечно, очень сильно мешает, но никаких особых действий, ну, это нам никак не мешает. Нашей победе никак не повлияет на нашу победу. А также, да, гаубицы эти М-77 постоянно уничтожаются. Что еще есть? Захватано, но захватанных пунктов наблюдательных. Дохуя, много-много западного оружия находили, также боеприпасов много. Вот, покидают, то есть, посты. У них оружие есть, а боеприпасов не так много. Они оставляют его также на позициях и бросают позиции. Уходят без западного оружия. Без стволов именно.
У вас есть проблемы патроны, проблемы еда, проблемы формы или нет?
Нет, какие проблемы. Кормят, одевают. С водой, да, немножечко. С водой немножечко есть, но это все равно не критично. Решается. Мы находимся на передке, а не где-то там. Тулу, где? Мы сюда приехали побеждать.
У вас есть все, которое вы хотите для работы и для живет здесь?
Собственно, нам необходимо, у нас все есть. Нас обеспечивают. Хорошо.
So, вы, вас местный Луганск. На Европа и США и Украина сказали, Луганск это Украина. Что вы могу как местный сказать за это?
Я только могу посмеяться в лицо прямо. Луганск нет. Луганск не Америка, не Европа, он ей не будет. И не Украина тем более. Луганск российский город. Российскими жителями. И там уже все налаживается после Украины. После Украины. Сейчас там все отстраивается, дороги появились, люди снимают видео и показывают, типа, ничего, ну типа, вот как это наши.
Что отстроила Россия за это время, пока не идет война, а что отстроила Украина, что ничего вообще?
Да, что ничего не было, приехали эти оккупанты, приехали и все начали отстраивать, асфальт старый ломать.
Что вы думал за украинские контрступления?
Что я думаю? Ну все, что это шляпа полная, что это полная шляпа просто. Никакого наступления. Это...
Ну, соберутся, мы их заметим, по-любому выявим и разобьем.
Наступление так какового. Ну да, было тяжело сначала, но потом мы снова сплотились духом и выстояли, не отдали ни метра своей земли.
Ребята, у вас есть слова для народа Запад, который думает, вы орки, вы монстры. Как реальны?
Орки и монстры сидят перед нами. Вот там, где, вот в той стороне орки и монстры, которые отстреливали школы, детские сады, жилые дома, больницы. Вот там монстры сидят. Мы монстры разве? Мы такого не делаем.
И дальше разбивают школы, инфраструктуру и так далее.
Can you introduce yourself?
Andrea Lucci, the Italian journalist. I live and work in Lugansk and Donbass now.
Mm-hmm. And what are we doing here today?
Today we are in the position of Russian soldiers between Severodonetsk and Sibirsk, and we are out the position and advanced position for saw and make interview with soldiers that are working on with observation and in the second day of election. I think this is an important day because the soldiers can vote also if they are working.
Можем вопрос. Тут опасное место сейчас или что обстановка? Как?
Сейчас, да, опасно. Ну, погода усилилась, поднялся ветер, как бы птички вражеские не летают, БПЛАшки не летают. Более-менее спокойная обстановка. Можно передвигаться, да, на позицию спокойненько. Ну, сейчас ждем ротации, поэтому ну, мы сейчас пока вот пока плохая погода, ветер поднялся. Ротируемся, проголосовали, и сейчас меняем пацанов, которые там даже сидят. Меняем их, они тоже идут голосовать.
Дальше Дима?
Дальше никого нет. Дальше
Мы не могу туда,
дальше,
да?
Дальше туда не надо идти, там уже серая зона. Ну там уже опаснее, потому что укропы знают, что там наблюдательный пункт. Они бывают, туда что-нибудь скидывают, то есть бластик этих же. Но нет, сейчас лучше, вообще лучше туда не стоит ходить.
So, что мы будем делать сейчас?
Мы сейчас мы подождем ребят с разведгруппы. Подождем их, доложим установку, и мы двинемся дальше. Ну, там, вам там снимать не стоит. Вам снимать там не стоит.
So, you heard it from the soldiers, what's happening here. It's been a short report here, but we're showing you everything we can.
All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah.
Yep. We back?
Okay. Are we back?
There we go.
Okay.
Thank you, Patrick. All right. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about this JFK assassination update and the Secret Service agent who was there that day and what he's saying now to maybe clear his, I don't know, clear his conscience at an age of 88 years old. People do that from time to time. This one is a pretty big bombshell, and it really undermines the Warren Commission report in a big, big way, which we'll get to in just a moment.
Isn't the Warren Commission the place where conspiracy theories were invented?
Yeah, basically.
It was literally that report where that term came from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, CIA.
Yeah. All right. Before we get there, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear, because as you know, from time to time, we have Kevin McDermott, the founder of Lear Capital, on our show to bring us valuable insights as to what's happening to our global economies. And recently, he brought insight into why so many countries led by the BRICS nations plan to move out from under the U.S. dollar and create a gold-backed currency and what that could mean to the value of your savings and retirement. Now, we want to strongly recommend that you check this out for yourself. Do your own research by calling Lear Capital or going to LearRedacted.com and get a free copy of the Tipping Point Report that helps explain all of this and how you can protect your savings and retirement with gold and silver. Because it's only a matter of time until we're forced to use digital currencies. So you need to get educated quickly to preserve the wealth of what you already had. Now, for the past few years, we've been moving away from the U.S. dollar for our investments and into hard assets like gold and silver and real estate, because, of course, the writing's on the wall. We have to protect ourselves and we all have to make our best educated decisions about where this global economy is going. So you do that too. Call Lear Redacted. Request their special report called The Tipping Point. It's free information about the dollar, the economy, and what it could mean for your savings and retirement. So make sure you go to LearRedacted.com or call 800-613-3557. This report will open your eyes to what's coming. And we want to thank Kevin and Lear Capital for making this information available just to Redacted viewers. So once again, the phone number, 800-613-3557, or go online right now to LearRedacted.com.
I think you said Kevin McDermott.
What did I say?
I think you said, but it's Kevin DeMeritt. But I think you're thinking of Dylan McDermott.
Okay.
Because we,
probably. Sorry.
I'm a big fan of McDermott pool cues. I own several of them. That's what my daily pool cue is a McDermott. So that might be what you're referring to.
That's probably exactly. That's exactly what she was thinking of.
Philip just, he leveled up in the pool world.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that.
Many of you don't know. Yeah. Right. Philip, who you hear, our technical director, is one of the, a fantastic pool player who just won a big competition in Las Vegas.
He is a grand poopah of pool. Yeah, what do you call it? You're a level 8, level 7?
No, I'm not a level 8. I'm a level 4.
Level 4. Close.
There is I'm not that great. I'm good, but I'm not.
Wait,
I'm
lower not is better, right?
No, higher is better.
Higher is better. Oh, okay.
But it's still better than me.
7.
Yeah.
You could tell me you're a 5 and I'm 10, 12. 221,
whatever it takes. Okay.
All right, let's get to it. Well, explosive new details now in the JFK assassination, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., presidential candidate, is responding to this. Yes, a member of the Secret Service who was there that day, who picked up the so-called magic bullet, is now telling his story. He's 88 years old. And we'll get to that part of the story in a second. But first, the official U.S. government narrative, of course, around all of this is that JFK was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald, a lone gunman who fired 3 shots, right? The last 2 shots killed the president. That's the ridiculous position, even though the infamous Zapruder film and eyewitness testimony totally discounts that. And it shows Kennedy being shot in the back and in the front. But never mind the facts, never mind the film, never mind the eyewitnesses. It doesn't matter, right? The famously corrupt Warren Commission report, led by Pennsylvania's own Arlen Specter, the worst, put forward the idea that one of the bullets, in fact, it was really Arlen Specter, whose idea of the magic bullet made it into the report in the first place. And so the idea is that one of the bullets that was fired at the president's limousine struck not only Kennedy in the back, but then also struck Texas Governor John B. Connally in the back as well. And it hit his chest, it hit his wrist, it hit his thigh bone. Connally was riding next to Kennedy at the time, and it immediately became known as the magic bullet theory. Well, Connally was, you know, right in the front to the right in that seat. So all of this became known as the magic bullet theory, and that somehow this bullet somehow shot through his back brace, Kennedy's back brace, 15 layers of clothing, 7 layers of skin, and approximately 15 inches of muscle tissue. Oh, and pulverized 4 inches of Connally's ribs, shattered his radius bone, and then was found nearly perfectly intact on the gurney at the hospital later that afternoon. Makes a lot of sense, right? No bullet would ever do that, but never mind. So here is that bullet that went through all of those layers of skin, tissue, bone, seat, back, brace, everything. Perfectly intact, right? This is the actual magic bullet. You can see nary a scratch on.
That's the actual bullet that they had.
Yeah.
That's the, because that still got the casing on it. What, did they throw it at him?
I don't know exactly what, like, this is the idea that this was the cartridge from that rifle, that it was perfectly intact. Looks great. No problems at all. And that's the thing. If you ever, you know, ever watch JFK, Oliver Stone's film, you can like see them sort of placing it on the stretcher and it's like a perfectly intact bullet. You're like, how the hell? What? So the bullet was found on a gurney in the corridor of the Parkland Memorial Hospital after the assassination. The Warren Commission found that this gurney was the one that had carried Governor Connally. In its final conclusion, of course, the Warren Commission found persuasive evidence from the experts, quote, that a single bullet caused President Kennedy's neck wound and all of the wounds that were found in Governor Connally's body. So it came through his back and it went all around, zipped around into his leg, did all that damage. Well, on Saturday, 88-year-old former Secret Service agent Paul Landis gave an exclusive interview with the New York Times where he shared his revelations regarding what happened on November 2nd, 1963. It's a fascinating read. And Landis says that that year he was a Secret Service agent and he was assigned to First Lady Jackie Kennedy's protective detail. This is Landis right there. There he is, 88 years old. Okay. Now, take a look at where he was that day. There he is. I've circled it in red. There he is on the back of the president's on the back of the car behind the president's limousine on the outboard. Okay, he's the one in the very back to the back right. And what the moment you're looking at
over his right shoulder.
Yeah, he's looking over his right shoulder, and so is the Secret Service agent right in front of him. They're both looking over their right shoulders because they just heard what they thought was like a firecracker go off. And of course, you can see the other people in the audience there also looking in that direction. And then if you look in the middle of your screen there where the president's, I've circled in red, the president's hand is coming up to his neck. Okay, so they're coming up to his neck. And so anyway, I should be clear that magic bullet, that's what it looks like. That was the idea, that was similar to the magic bullet, right? That the bullet, not with the casing, but the actual bullet itself was pretty much perfectly intact. So just to be clear, someone in the chat just making sure that we understand that. Yes, exactly. It's not the actual bullet. That's the type of bullet that was used in that rifle. So I'm sorry about that. Just to be clear. Sorry.
No, I guess it was just me being confused by the image.
I just want to be clear. Just want to be clear. So Landis told the Times. Landis told the Times that after Kennedy was shot, he was the one who retrieved the so-called magic bullet and explain the chaotic scene that gave him the opportunity, the New York Times did. So there was nobody there to secure the scene, he says, and that it was a big, big bother to me. All the agents that were there were focused on the president, he said. A crowd was gathering, he says. This was all going on so quickly. And I was just afraid that it was a piece of evidence and that I realized right away, very important, and I didn't want it to disappear or to get lost. So it was, Paul, you've got to make a decision, he's saying to himself. And so I grabbed it. Now, according to Landis, there was nothing magical about the bullet. He says that the bullet struck Kennedy in the back, but it was, quote, undercharged. And then it popped back out before the president's body was removed from the limo. It never touched Connally. So it went through the president's back and right into the fabric of the limousine. It never hit Connally. Therefore, it was never a magic bullet. Landis went on to tell the Times that while he had always viewed Oswald as a lone gunman, he's no longer sure about it. So once they reached the hospital, Mr. Hill and Mr. Landis then coaxed the distraught first lady out of the backseat, according to the New York Times. Let her go, please. Let go of your husband. We need to take him inside to see if we can save his life. After they exited the car, that's when Paul Landis noticed two bullet fragments in a pool of bright red blood here in the back seat of the limousine. And he picked up one of them. He fingered one of them, but he put it back down, he said. He didn't pick it up and put it in his pocket. But that's when he said he noticed the intact bullet in the seam of the tufted dark leather cushioning in front. And so that's when he grabbed it. He slipped it into his coat pocket, headed into the hospital where he planned to give it to a supervisor. But in the confusion, instinctively, he put it on Kennedy's stretcher inside the hospital. So he had the magic bullet that had been fired, and he placed it on the stretcher inside the hospital. So this means there was no magic bullet. There was none.
Because, I'm sorry, I'm trying to follow this. Because there were three.
Yeah, well, there were three shots.
Yeah.
Right? The idea all along is that, no, this one bullet, this one that came from... Because the whole idea of the magic bullet is that there were never a shot from the front, right? It was a lone gunman from behind.
Yeah.
It was Oswald, six floors up in the book depository, firing this shot, these three shots.
Sure.
Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Like, he fired that quickly. That's the narrative. That's the official narrative.
Yeah.
So for there to have been, so the magic bullet had to have come from him.
Yeah.
Right. And then no front shot could have come from anywhere because that other person didn't exist. There's only one person.
Okay.
There's only one person and he's up there. So this means there was no magic bullet, and the bullet that passed right through Kennedy's back lodged itself into the seat. It never hit Governor Connally. And he pulled it out of the fabric, and that's the reason it was in such great condition. Nothing magic about it. Didn't go through the two men.
Mm-hmm.
Another revelation, Mr. Landers says, is he was never interviewed by the Warren Commission.
One thing about this...
Hold on. Did you hear me? He was never interviewed by the Warren Commission. He was literally on the back of the limousine. And they didn't interview him about what he saw, about what he heard, about the bullet that he pulled out of the frickin' limo. Can you let that sink in for a second? I mean,
don't you think there might have been protocol even back then to, like, not touch the crime scene, not touch the car?
I mean, we didn't have DNA testing back then, right? So it's, well, we're going to pick up bullet casings, I guess. I don't know. But he described the scene as so chaotic that he felt the need to sort of preserve the crime scene. It's what he was describing this interview, that it was like they just pulled the limos up and they ran into the hospital and there was no protection around the vehicle at all. So he felt compelled to try to preserve some of the crime scene. That's what he says in this interview.
Okay. And make the point one more time about what the president's doing by holding his neck.
Well, yeah, maybe we can put up that photo again if you want, the black.
Because I'm zooming into it and I'm just trying to see...
Okay, so on the back, you know, here you see Landis back there circled in red, okay?
Yeah.
And then you see circled in the center is the president holding his hand, bringing his hand up famously, okay, when he sort of slumps forward. And, of course, the book depository is six floors up. And what we now know from forensic pathologists have testified under oath and have admitted... Well, the president was like the bullet trajectory was coming upwards, not this way from down from the book depository. The one that struck him in the back had an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
Right. As Cyril Wecht writes in his great book about the forensics of this, it's upward trajectory. So how does it come from a sixth-floor book depository if it comes this way into his back?
There's another hand holding his hand. Do you see that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but in that photo.
Boy, there. I wish they had an iPhone. That's a grainy photo.
But anyway, it's amazing. There he is looking over his shoulder to what he describes as hearing a firecracker, which he hoped was a firecracker, he said, which he immediately found out in a moment's notice it wasn't. And then, of course, Secret Agent Hill jumps up on the back of the hood and gives a thumbs down, letting everyone know that the president has been shot. Thumbs down means he's shot. So, I mean, can you imagine? He was never interviewed by the Warren Commission. How the hell does that happen? And now RFK Jr. tweeted this out yesterday. He says, the magic bullet theory is now dead. This preposterous construction has served as the mainstay of the theory that a single shooter murdered President Kennedy since the Warren Commission advanced it 60 years ago under the direction of the former CIA director Alan Dulles, whom my uncle fired. The recent revelations by JFK's Secret Service protector Paul Landis have prompted even the New York Times, among the last lonely defenders of the Warren report, to finally acknowledge its absurdity. So the relationship, of course, between the CIA and the mob, and how this was ordered at the highest levels, and how the CIA ordered the killing of JFK, we now know that. Yes, that this was an inside job of the highest order. James Fetzer is arguably one of the best researchers on the JFK assassination, which we'll get to in just a second. But here is Robert Kennedy talking about how this corruption was there, and the president was going to dismantle the CIA at the time, and of course was a perfect, perfect impetus for him to be assassinated.
And my uncle came into office 2 months later. He was fighting his intelligence apparatus and his military because they wanted to invade. They wanted to do the Bay of Pigs. He was totally against it, and he let them roll over him. And in the middle of the Bay of Pigs, he realized they were lying to him, and he realized the function of the intelligence agencies had become to provide the military-industrial complex with a constant pipeline of war. And he came out during the middle of the night during the Bay of Pigs catastrophe, and he said, I want to take the CIA. Alan Dulles had lied to him, Charles Cabell, Richard Bissell, Louis Lemitzer, Curtis LeMay had all lied to him through their teeth. And he said, I want to take the CIA and shatter it into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. And you know, George W. Bush had the same problem. George W. Bush says the worst mistake he made as president was listening to CIA Director George Tenet tell him it was a slam dunk that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And so the neocons and CIA got to go into Iraq and throw out and do regime change. And we got nothing. Now we've spent $8 trillion. And what do we get for that $8 trillion? Nothing. Worse than nothing.
What do we get for that? Bless you. So to answer your questions here about the magic bullet, let's see if we can show this. So this here is the actual fully intact magic bullet, which you can see there. So this is nary a scratch on the damn thing. This is the one he pulled from the fabric that he laid on the gurney that fell to the floor. So if this traveled through 15 layers of clothing, 7 layers of skin, because it had to go back in, back out, back in 7 times, right? Bone, pulverized bone, radius bone, you name it, that this is what it would actually look like. That this is the actual bullet, that it would actually look like this. No, it would absolutely not look like that. It would be, you know, it would be decimated if it ran through all of those pieces. It would, as someone in the chat just said, it would be in a bunch of little pieces. So here's James Fetzer, arguably one of the foremost authorities on this. And he says that the operation was coordinated at the highest echelons of the American government agencies, including the Pentagon, the CIA, the National Security Council, and the Secret Service involved in all of this. Watch.
Get this. Jack was threatening to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He had refused to invade Cuba in spite of the Joint Chiefs' unanimous recommendation. He'd gone ahead and signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union despite their unanimous opposition. He was pulling all of our forces out of Vietnam by the end of 1964, and the chiefs thought he was an obstacle to the fight against international godless communism. They were wrong, but they were limited by their own failure to understand the world in a comprehensive way, as did JFK.
So someone in the chat pointed out that, and I think they're referencing, so Lord Sterling says this documentary proves the magic bullet is possible. It was recreated. So what he's referring to, if I'm not mistaken, is the 50th anniversary recreation. There, during the 50th anniversary, they did a recreation of this magic bullet. And the idea was that they were able to say that it was possible. But of course, you know, again, this is a recreation. Can you say that those circumstances are correct given the conditions at the time, right? Nothing's ever perfect. So I guess it's possible. But what I'm making the point now, and what I think Paul Landis, the Secret Service agent, is making the point, is that the magic bullet did not happen. That he pulled the bullet out of the car that went through his back. Therefore, the bullet that was in Connolly was not the same one. It's a different bullet. And of course, if you even dive more deeply into it, and if they had actually done an autopsy by people who had ever done an autopsy before, but they didn't, they wouldn't allow the doctor at Parkland Memorial to actually do the autopsy. They picked him up by his armpits, lifted him aside, and basically told him, you're not doing the autopsy. Then they took the president's body back to Washington, D.C., and two people who'd never done an autopsy before with a gunshot wound did the autopsy. And if they had actually looked at his brain, they would have seen that there were two different paths, one from the front and one from the back, that hit him in the head. But they didn't do that because I guess it wasn't important enough to do it. And as quickly that they could paint the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, as the lone gunman and sweep away any other conspiracy theories, then that's how we can move on from this. And now the president is dead. We can continue in Vietnam. The CIA can thrive. Lyndon Johnson becomes president. And, you know, there you go. So much water under the bridge. Fascinating. Let us know what you think about this. Read the interesting story in the New York Times if you dare to. It's really interesting to see about this Secret Service agent who's 88 years old. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys think he's sort of at the end of his life and he's wanting
and
to
again,
tell his story, clear
CIA,
his conscience?
The CIA, you know, based on this report, coined the term conspiracy theory to label anybody who didn't buy their telling of it as crazy.
Yeah.
It was a deliberate attack on any kind of controversial thinking or questioning.
Yeah.
And it continues today in many other ways. Who would have thought that conspiracy theory would have such a big life of its own after the Kennedy report?
Indeed. Let us know your thoughts on this. Thank you guys. And yeah.
I liked that. Good job. I mean, I don't like it. You know, it's a bit of history.
It's
I don't
fascinating.
Like, but I think you did a good job with that.
Well, thank you. It's a fascinating subject. And I've, you know, interviewed Richard Belzer, who of course wrote some books on the subject, and all of the people who mysteriously died who were associated with this were like wind up with mysterious heart attacks and poisonings and mysterious suicides. And read Richard Belzer's book on this. It's like, I think it's called The Hit List. Man, crazy, crazy, crazy book, but it's jaw dropping to read it. All right. We should mention that we do have a community. We'd love for you to join our community. And I should mention right after tonight's show, we are going to premiere on YouTube our new 9/11 documentary, because we launched it to our redacted rebels first and to our Rumble community first. And that's the benefit of joining our community, because you get to see access to those things before anyone else. Plus, we're able to show you the uncensored version of it. We had to cut a few things out for YouTube because they will block us. They will ban us. They will not let us show it here. But nevertheless, we do have a community. If you'd like to support independent journalism and what we do here, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support us by going to redacted.inc and click on the Become a VIP button right there. And like I said, you get access to our locals community. We're launching our book club, where you get access to videos before anyone else does, and exclusive content and live streams that no one else does right there in our Rebels Redacted community. So again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can click the join button. You can become a redacted rebel and get access to that. And here on YouTube, after our show tonight, live, after our show, we are going to have our documentary, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That.
Yes, that. So yes, right, premiering right after the show, you can watch our Redacted Presents 9/11 documentary. I've seen a couple of people here who said they've watched it already and they loved it. So thank you guys so much. But it will premiere, I think, Philip, right, directly after the show. So you can stay right here, I believe.
No, it'll be. I think it's scheduled to at 3 p.m. Pacific. So.
Okay, that is
6 half an p.m. hour. Eastern.
In about a half an hour. Okay, so you'll see the premiere right here on YouTube to come over and watch it there if you'd like, and you'll see the premiere getting ready to start. So please watch that with everyone else as that YouTube documentary will launch on 9/11. So thank you guys so much, and we will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.